Good morning. You've queued up the audio version of today's Offbeat Oregon Du Jour entry. Offbeat Oregon Du Jour is an RSS service that brings you a news story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History newspaper column every day in your choice of text and images or audio-only formats. You're listening now to the audio version. Offbeat Oregon Du Jour brings you true stories from Oregon history, stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai'd sailors and Skid Road bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries and just all sorts of great stuff like that. The stories are real, and citations to sources are included with the text versions. To get these delivered regularly, direct your podcatcher to ofor.us/p-podcast and subscribe. If you'd rather read them and see the pictures that go with them while you're waiting in line at Starbucks, direct your newsreader to ofor.us/t. The audio version is super simple. Just me reading you the column. No bumper music, no sound effects, no dog and pony show, and also, if the movie ratings people were going to rate Offbeat Oregon Du Jour, they'd probably give it a PG. Most folks find it suitable for family viewing. The columns are covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike 3.0 license. Today's column was first published on February 20th, 2011. Its headline, "When Dynamite Truck Blew Up in Roseburg, It Looked Like Nuclear War." The summary: a truck driver parked 13,000 pounds of explosives next to the hardware store downtown. That night, the hardware store caught fire, and so did the dynamite, in the biggest human-caused disaster in Oregon history. Here's the story. It's hard to imagine what it must have been like in the cockpit of the Frontier Airlines passenger jet flying along at 17,000 feet in the middle of the night when the pilot saw a mushroom cloud rising over an Oregon city. The year was 1959. All over the country, children were ducking and covering to prepare for nuclear war, which everyone knew was a real possibility. Only 2 years earlier, the Soviet Union had sent Sputnik 1 into orbit, demonstrating that they could drop a nuclear warhead pretty much anywhere they liked, the same as we could. Quite why the Kremlin would have picked Roseburg, Oregon, as a target would have been unclear. But with a glowing, fiery ball of evidence rising slowly into the air above that little Douglas County city, the pilots can be excused for not asking the question before radioing the Medford Airport Control Tower that global thermonuclear war was breaking out, with Roseburg at ground zero, an hour and 14 minutes after midnight, on August 7th, 1959. Well, luckily for most of us, they were wrong. What they were witnessing was not nuclear war, but the biggest human-caused disaster in Oregon history, something still referred to in Douglas County, knowingly and with a slight touch of reverence, as the blast. The blast involved 6.5 tons of explosives. That would be 13 times the amount used in the State Highway Department's ill-starred attempt to blow up a dead whale off the beach in Florence 11 years later. It left a crater 60 feet wide and 20 feet deep, leveled all the buildings for blocks around, and took glass out of windows 9 miles away. And it killed 13 people, a number that seems miraculously small considering the scale of the destruction. Here's how it happened. George Rutherford, a truck driver for a Washington company called Pacific Powder Company, was making a delivery to Gerritsen Building Supply in downtown Roseburg. But he got there after the business had closed for the day. So he parked his truck next to Gerritsen's and walked 3 blocks to the Umpqua Hotel, where he checked in for the night. Inside the truck were 2 tons of dynamite and 4.5 tons of blasting powder. A few feet away from it was a building that a few hours later would be completely engulfed in fire. No one knows how the Gerritsen fire got started. All the evidence is, shall we say, gone. It might have been a pile of oily rags bursting spontaneously into flame. It might have been a hobo's jungle fire by the railroad tracks. It might have even been an employee's cigarette left in the wrong place hours before. What everyone does know is what happened when the flames got into the barrels of paint thinner, kerosene, and other flammable spirits kept in Garrettson's warehouse. The fire got very big and very smoky very fast. The alarm was sounded at around 1 a.m. when a young mill worker named Dennis Tandy, driving home with his pregnant wife in their tiny air-cooled Fiat, noticed the fire. After calling the fire department, Dennis stayed to help. Marilyn, his wife, stayed in the car about a block away. A quarter hour later, she would suddenly become a widow, and the tiny, flimsy-looking Fiat 500 would save her life. Firefighters were on the scene within 2 minutes, and with Tandy's help, started battling to suppress the fire in Garrettson's. Fueled by paint products, the smoke was thick and poisonous, and pouring past Rutherford's truck, obscuring the placards on its flanks that marked explosives. Minutes ticked by. The sides of the truck started to buckle and warp. Then the truck was on fire. Then, when the blast hit George Rutherford, he was racing from his hotel to his truck. Awakened by the sirens, he'd been desperately trying to get to his rig before it was too late. And then, all at once, it was. The explosion blew him back toward the hotel and took off a piece of his nose. Bystanders had to restrain him to keep him from running back into the inferno. "Let me go," he kept saying. "I've got to see how many people I've killed." Several firefighters on the scene were literally blown apart. The mayor of Roseburg a little later picked up a firefighter's glove and found a hand inside it. Several people nearby were killed by broken glass, a woman and her daughter slain by the picture window through which they'd been watching the fire, and another woman picked up by the blast and thrown into the window of a car dealership. One unlucky young man had a bolt from Rutherford's truck bury itself in the back of his head. He died a month later. Others survived with various injuries. A total of 125 were hurt. In the wake of the blast, Roseburg residents came together to help get each other through. Lumber company trucks came downtown and handed out sheets of plywood so people could board up their blown-out windows. Shopkeepers labored for days picking up debris and sweeping up glass. Rutherford's company tried in a very clumsy sort of way to throw him under the bus, but these efforts only drew attention to the fact that they had ordered Rutherford to leave the truck in town for the night. There was a perfectly serviceable explosives depot outside town, but apparently company officials were worried someone would steal the dynamite from it if it were left there, so they actually told him not to use it. Perhaps in response to Pacific Powder Company's thumb-fingered attempt at blame-shifting, the Douglas County District Attorney actually filed an indictment for manslaughter against the company, but did not file any charges against Rutherford himself. Eventually, the state Supreme Court ruled that a company couldn't be prosecuted for manslaughter, and nothing came of this. But Pacific Powder could and did get sued by a great many people, as did Rutherford. The company in the end paid a little over $1 million in damages. The incident, as can well be imagined, cast a shadow over Rutherford that stayed with him the rest of his life. He died in 1996. Within a few years, insurance payments and other assistance had financed a rebuilding of downtown Roseburg. Other than a few plaques around town, a visitor would never know today that anything like this had happened. Still, the blast cast a long shadow. Years later, when I was in the service, guys would ask me where I was from, historian and Douglas County native Dale Greenlee recalls. When I'd say Roseburg, Oregon, 90% of the guys would look at me and say, "The blast." That's it for today. You just heard "When Dynamite Truck Blew Up in Roseburg, It Looked Like Nuclear War" by Finn J.D. John. That would be me. I first wrote and published it on February 20th, 2011. And if you'd like to see the art for this story, or print out a hard copy for any reason, go ahead and look it up on my website if you'd like. That's at offbeatoregon.com. That covers us until tomorrow, when we'll upload a story about the tiny home-built schooner that saved Tillamook settlers from, well, not exactly starving to death, but certainly from being cut off and snowed under with cheese and dairy products and nothing else. So look for it after about 6 a.m. So until then, well, have a great day.